Welcome back. This is City Views. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce. In 2011, Carol Mashter came to the conclusion that as much as she loved her career, it was getting in the way of her passion to climb mountains. And so she left her job and days later was en route to climb yet another of the seven summits. Now she's conquered them all. She's written a book about climbing Everest. She keeps writing and speaking and inspiring. And today on the program, Mashter joins us to talk about adventure in retirement. And Carol Mashter, welcome back. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for having me, Jennifer.
Good to see you again. She's known as the Silver Fox to her friends. She's been a research chemist, a university professor in the social sciences, and an epidemiologist for public health. Her book detailing her summit of Mount Everest is titled No Magic Helicopter, An Aging Amazon's Climb of Everest. And again, Dr. Carol Mashter is with us. You can join us. What adventures are you finding after age 60? And what do you want to know about Mashter's travels and her experiences? You can join us. 801-355-TALK is our number. 801-355-8255. Before we get to your adventures, walk us through the decision to leave the Utah Department of Health as an epidemiologist. I guess the big question is why? Why choose one path and not the other?
Good question, Jennifer. It was quite a journey because I started that job at age 55. It was a new field for me, and I felt extremely grateful to start a new career in my mid-50s. It was work that I liked. I liked the people I was working with, but I had made the mistake when a local television reporter met me at the airport when I came back from Everest. He asked, what's next? And I didn't know what was next. I was just getting my head around the fact I had just summited the world's highest mountain and had lived to tell the tale.
Sure.
So I blurted out something about the seven summits. Well, one has to be careful what one says on television, I guess, because that led me to this journey where about 3 months after Everest, I thought, well, why not the seven summits? So I had these two passions in my life, my work as an epidemiologist in the Seven Summits. And it turned out the work policy was not to grant permission for unpaid leave to go off for several weeks to climb large mountains in distant corners of the world. So I thought about it for a few months, gave them a year's notice, and said, you know, a woman's got to do what a woman's got to do. So off I went a year later.
For the uninitiated, what are the Seven Summits?
The Seven Summits are technically the highest point in each of the seven continents. However, the highest point in Australia is lower than some of the foothills that surround us here in our beautiful Salt Lake City. So some of the mountaineering community feel that one must climb a 16,000-foot limestone fin that rises out of the jungles of Papua, just north of Australia.
And
so there's actually eight Seven Summits, if that makes any kind of sense at all.
And you flew to Australia to climb one of these, the Vinson Massive.
Actually, the Vinson Massif is in Antarctica.
Okay.
The one in Papua is called Karstens Pyramid, and in March of 2012, that was going to be my seventh of the Seven Summits. I flew down there. And local difficulties prevented us from getting anywhere close to the mountain. It was extremely frustrating and very disappointing. It's quite expensive to get down there. So in despair, I was emailing my lists of friends from Bali. We had flown from Timika, which is on Papua, the big island of Papua. We'd flown back to Bali because it's a much more pleasant place to be. And I got on a crotchety little internet connection and was bewailing this sad situation to my friends. Well, one of my new friends that I'd climbed the Vinson Massif with in Antarctica, she lives in Australia. She said, if you can get here by Friday evening, it was Wednesday night, if you can get here by Friday evening, we're going to leave from my law office and go climb Kosciuszko, the highest point in Australia. So that meant I could come back to Salt Lake, having said I did, in fact, do seven of the seven summits.
Ah.
So this was the small miracle, and it taught me how important it is to not let one's initial focus or initial goal get in the way of other doors opening, because in my disappointment of not being able to do Karstens Pyramid, I thought, you know, this whole trip is a failure. Well, it worked. Somehow I found a flight to Sydney. I found her law office. Sydney's sort of a big, complicated city. I'd never been there before. And then as we started out in Sydney Friday, gridlock traffic, finally broke out of the traffic Friday night and got into a huge rainstorm, which threatened to wash out the road. And I just thought, this is just not meant to happen. You know, it was very, very frustrating. But we did get through to the trailhead. Dawn rose on a beautiful rain-washed day, and though Kosciuszko is as easy as climbing some of our foothills around here, it's about a 12-mile hike, so it's a long hike, but it's not a difficult hike. We had a wonderful time and celebrated my reaching the seventh of my seven summits and becoming the oldest woman in the world to do that with about two dozen other people that were there, mostly Australian people, but there were a couple of Americans and a few Canadians and stuff. And we turned it into a party, and it was wonderful. It's wonderful to share that with complete strangers that became instant friends.
Speaking with Dr. Carol Mashter, she is the author of the book No Magic Helicopter, An Aging Amazon's Climb of Everest, and she's a mountain climber. If you'd like to join us, 801-355-TALK is our number. If you share Carol's passion for mountain climbing, you know what it's like. Maybe you can describe some of your adventures. 801-355-TALK is our number. Carol, is this the way you thought you'd be living in retirement? First off, how old are you now?
I'm 66.
66.
66 and 3 months.
But who's counting?
Yes.
I mean, is this really how you thought you'd be spending your after work years?
To be honest, Jennifer, I didn't think about after work years. I have always focused my life around my profession. It's kind of how I've identified myself. I guess that's not uncommon in our culture. And retirement was a terrifying possibility that I didn't begin to think about until I was about 60, 62, and I had no interest in retiring at the time. So I faced it with some terror. I mean, who would I be if I wasn't some sort of professional punching a clock? I was proud of being a working American. I've worked for a paycheck ever since I was 9 years old.
It's part of your core identity then.
Absolutely. So giving up my job was earth-shattering for me, and I quailed in my boots. In fact, I planned, the way I planned it was to retire, and then within hours of my last day at work, I was on the first of a series of planes to go down to Antarctica. I figured then I wouldn't have to wake up and not have to know what I was going to do, you know? And I realized that being a working person had made me somewhat lazy in designing my life. If I knew what day of the week it was, I knew exactly what I had to do. If it was Monday through Friday, I got up, I did my morning routine, I was on my bicycle, I rode to work, I did my job, then I rode home. Then I did my evening chores, went to bed, started the whole thing over again. If it's on the weekend, I usually went to a meeting place for the Wasatch Mountain Club and hiked, snowshoed, skied, ice climbed, whatever it was, with my outdoor friends. Sunday evenings, I'd meditate with my meditation group. Wednesdays, I had a yoga class. You know,
so it was very regimented.
It was very regimented, and I felt a little lost without the regime. And so I realized I have to come up with my own regime, which is liberating, but it also requires more responsibility and more kind of aware living, which I think is a good thing.
So what does your new routine look like and feel like?
It's less regimented. What I try to do the evening before is note what commitments I have for the day. Like last night, I confirmed that indeed I was going to need to be here by a certain time, so I needed to plan around that. But typically, I'll get up, I have a simple, heart-healthy breakfast, then I do what I call my home exercises. At my age, I'm pretty stiff in the morning when I get up and my body hurts. And I found that the tendency is to want to not to move when I feel like that, which is pretty much every morning. But the best thing to do is to start some gentle movement and then work into more vigorous movement to kind of get things warmed up, loosened up, and then the pain dissipates, comes down to a low roar. I have a little bit of arthritis and tendonitis now, but they're manageable if I do what I know I need to do. So anyway, those are my usual morning things. In the summertime, I try to get out very early and work in my gardens the first 2 hours of daylight. Now that it's winter, I get up later, I try to start with a reading, a writing session. I'm working on another book. So I write for a while, and then there's a gym that I belong to. I go to the gym, usually 3 or 4 days a week, depending on the season. One of the wonderful things I find about being retired, if some of my Wasatch Mountain Club friends want to go for a bike ride on Wednesdays, I can do it. Or if somebody wants to go out on a ski tour on Thursday, I can do it. And so, like I said, the night before, I recognize what the kind of key commitments I want to make for myself or have already made to other people are, and then I work in the other activities around that. Later in the day, I try to get in another writing session. Yesterday, I had the yen to do Bikram yoga, the hot yoga. That's a new thing for me. I don't like the heat, but I'm learning to accept the discipline of Bikram yoga. So yesterday afternoon, after I'd written until I was needed a break, I went and did Bikram yoga for a while. So
at age 66, though, there are physical limitations. You mentioned the bones are a little creaky in the mornings, but I mean, you're in phenomenal shape. How do you just keep that motivation up? Is it the goal of knowing you've got a mountain to climb in 3 months, or what is it on the mental side of what you do, of your adventures?
Really good questions, Jennifer, and you've hit on some of my secrets. I find it does help to have a future goal in mind. I try not to let that rule my life, but I'm more willing and more likely to work out regularly if I know I have a half marathon coming up in 2 months, or if I have a mountain that I want to climb in 6 weeks, or some big trip that I'm doing. So having those future goals does help, but also I've just found in the school of hard knocks and hard experience that if I don't move and use my body, I lose more and more. So I try to strike a balance. I think one of the most important lessons I've learned in mountaineering is the concept of balance, not just keeping your balance and keeping from falling over, though that's very important, but more of a figurative sense of balance, of knowing when to push oneself, what pain is good to push through and what pain one needs to be respectful of and back away from. Yoga is a good teacher of that, learning the difference between feeling uncomfortable versus doing damaging pain to oneself.
Mm. Speaking with Dr. Carol Mashter, author of the book No Magic Helicopter and Aging Amazon's Climb of Everest. And we're talking about adventures in retirement. 801-355-TALK is our number. Carol, I know we've talked about this before, but how do you finance these adventures?
Well, I was raised Methodist, and my parents taught my sister, my younger sister and me, that we had to save 10%. We had to give 10% to the church, and then the second 10% we saved. We put in a savings account. First, it was a piggy bank when we were 5 and 6 years old. And I have not always been able to save 10%, but I kept that concept. I always saved a bit before I spent the rest. And I did that through my childhood, teens and 20s. And starting in my 30s and 40s and 50s, I invested in a balanced mutual fund portfolio. And now that I'm in my 60s, I'm spending.
Mm.
So where I get to go and how often I get to go places does depend on the stock market.
Sure, sure. We've got about a minute left. Tell us what's on tap for 2013.
Well, again, I have to be careful what I say, since I got myself in trouble telling Brent Hunsinger that I was going to climb the Seven Summits. But no, seriously, I've given this some thought. In February next month, I'm off to Patagonia and southern Chile. That's a part of the world that's very beautiful that I've wanted to see for many years. So that's in February. Then in the second half of summer, I'm thinking of perhaps going to the Alps. I've never seen the Alps, and climbing Mont Blanc and perhaps Mont Rosa and Jungfrau and some of the big mountains in the Alps. I'd like to see what an alpine culture is like, since I've seen Andean cultures and Nepali cultures in the Himalayas. And then maybe another trip to Nepal and climbing some big mountains, but not nearly as big as Everest.
You want to set some more records?
Not interested in setting records so much. I feel 2 world records are enough. One doesn't want to be greedy about these things. And those were sort of incidental. It's more, I will pay a lot of money and put a lot of work into having experiences. Experiences that are illuminating and edifying.
Dr. Carol Master, she's the author of the book No Magic Helicopter, An Aging Amazon's Climb of Everest. Very quickly, when's your next book coming out?
Oh, golly, I wish I knew. It's coming very slowly. I'm hoping perhaps by the end of this year, meaning 2013.
Well, we'll keep an eye out for it. And Carol, happy travels to you.
Thank you so much, Jennifer.
City Views is a production of KCPW News in Salt Lake City. Our technical director today is Tyler Ford. Ryan Cron composed our theme music. And you can continue the discussion online at kcpw.org. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at City Views SLC. For City Views, I'm Jennifer Napier Pierce.